Hello, class. I'm recording this from Chicago, and in God's providence, it's Halloween, which is apropos because this Sunday school's lesson is going to center around our desire as humans to join in the misery of others, to commiserate with them. And this is kind of the source of the attraction that people have for watching horror movies, for watching scary movies, movies that involve the miseries of others. The sections that we're going to be reading are the beginning of Book 3. If you remember from my previous discussions, Augustine wrote 10 books together, which are called Augustine's Confessions. And our Sunday school class will begin with the first opening paragraphs of Book 3. Paragraphs 1.1, 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4. And the title of this is Relief, Not Reason, The Desire of Man. Looking at Book 3, it opens with Augustine's time in Carthage. And if you remember, Augustine grew up in North Africa. He showed promise, and so his parents sent him to a local school, which you could call college, in Madeira, which was about a four-hour distance away. They ran out of money, and so he had to come back home. He fell in with the bad crowd, but eventually went back to Madeira, where he finished. And then his parents sent him all the way to the northeastern Mediterranean coast, to the town of Carthage, which is modern-day Tunisia. This would have been about a week's trip, probably a week and a half. And he was truly on his own. It would have been like a course of study in Europe. This was his master's, his PhD level rhetorical training. And if anything had happened to his family back home, he wouldn't have been able to get home in time. If his parents had gotten sick or any of his siblings, it would have taken a week, maybe a week and a half for news just to reach him. So he was truly on his own. And so, appropriately, Book 3 opens with Augustine's reflections on this time when he truly was a young adult in Carthage. I'll start it with paragraph 1.1. I came to Carthage and was immersed in a seething cauldron of illicit loves. I had not yet loved, but was burning to experience love, and consumed by an inner craving, was vexed at myself for not craving more. In love with love, I sought an object of love, but shunned a path that had no snares. I was consumed by hunger, deprived of inner food, deprived of you, my God. And yet it was not for you that I hungered. I lacked all desire for incorruptible sustenance, not because I was sated by it, but the emptier I was, the more I disdained it, and so my soul sickened, and covered in pustules, it gushed forth, wretchedly striving to be soothed by sensual objects. Yet if these objects had not had a soul, they would not have been objects of love. To love and be loved was all the sweeter to me if I could delight in the body of the beloved. So I sullied the clear spring of friendship with the filth of carnality, dulling its brightness with infernal lust. And though I was base and vile, in my vanity, I paraded myself as refined and urbane. So I flung myself into that love which I longed to be seized. My God, my mercy, in your goodness, how much gall did you sprinkle on that sweetness? For I was loved and secretly attained the fetters of delight, rejoicing in being enmeshed in the tangle of misery, to be scourged with the burning rods of jealousy, suspicion, fear, anger and contention. And stepping out of this paragraph, it sounds a lot like a freshman year of college for a lot of young adults. They start dating, they're away from their parents, they're away from that daily touch point that their parents have in their lives, and they make some mistakes. And more often than not, those mistakes result in jealousy, suspicion, fear, anger, and contention. That's exactly what happened to Augustine. We know that when he went to Carthage and he was away from his family, he did have a live-in girlfriend. And this person that he lived with, they would eventually have a son together. And so this was a very turbulent time in Augustine's life. We'll step back into 2.2. I was captivated by theatrical spectacles filled with images of my miseries, which poured fuel on my fire. Why is it that man wants to sorrow by watching distressing and tragic things that he would not want to endure? And yet he wants to endure this sorrow as a spectator, and this sorrow is his delight. What is this if not utter folly? Indeed, the more a man is moved by such suffering, the less free he is of it himself. For when one is suffering, it's called misery, while when one feels sympathy for the suffering of others, it's called compassion. But what sort of compassion is this for things that are feigned and staged? The spectator is not summoned to help, but only to grieve. And the more he grieves, the more he applauds the actor of these representations. But if the misfortunes, whether of ancient times or invented, are acted in such a way that the spectator does not grieve, he leaves the theater filled with disappointment and anger. But if he does grieve, he delights in his tears. This paragraph is describing these theater spectacles that folks would go to watch tragedies, to watch what you could call modern-day tragedies, modern-day horror movies, where people were reenacting gruesome deaths, extreme crises, and they were supposed to leave the viewer of the play filled with grief. And Augustine's asking a very, very honest question. Why is it that man wants to sorrow by watching distressing and tragic things that he would not want to endure? He's going to kind of explore that later in the following paragraphs, but keep that in mind. Think of the idea of how awful it is that we enjoy and pay money to go see actors who are in a movie that's trying to be as accurate as possible, showing people being mutilated and murdered and killed and tortured. It's an awful thing to think about if you think about it honestly. We'll step back into paragraph 2.3. Thus, sorrows are also loved, but people want to enjoy themselves. No one likes to be miserable, even if he likes to commiserate. So do we love sorrows because commiserating cannot exist without misery? This also arises from what we might call the vein of human relations. But where does this vein lead? Where does it flow to? Why does it pour into that torrent of boiling pitch that gushes forth into the monstrous surges of hideous lust into which it is degenerated, torn from heavenly serenity by its own proclivities? So should compassion be cast aside? By no means. One can at times love sorrows, but beware of impurity. O my soul, under the protection of my God, the God of our fathers, who is to be praised and exalted above all for eternity, beware of impurity. Not that I have ceased to feel pity, but in those days in the theaters, I shared in the delight of the lovers when they enjoyed one another in disgraceful acts, although what they were doing was imaginary and on the stage, and when they lost one another, it was as if I grieved with them in pity. I enjoyed both their delights and their sorrows. But today, I have far more pity for him who takes pleasure in shameful acts than for him who believes he is suffering through lack of some pernicious delight, or because he has lost out on some pitiable stroke of luck. This is certainly the truer compassion, but sorrow does not delight in it. For even if a person who grieves for those in distress is commended for his charity, he who is genuinely compassionate would prefer there to be nothing for him to grieve for. Only if there were such a thing as malevolent benevolence, which cannot be, would a person who truly and sincerely pities wish that there were more pitiable wretches for him to pity. Hence there is pain that is laudable, but not pain that can be loved. For you, O Lord God, who loves souls and has compassion far purer than ours, you have pity that is more unchangeable, since you are never beset by sorrow. Who is sufficient for such things? Now in this paragraph, he's asking an honest question, and I'll repeat it here. He who is genuinely compassionate would prefer there to be nothing for him to grieve for. So he asked the question, is there a thing such as malevolent benevolence? And the idea is like this codependent relationship where you have someone who enjoys compassion. He enjoys or she enjoys commiserating with somebody. And so they surround themselves with people that are in need of pity. And he observes that in heaven, when we've put all sorrows behind ourselves, will we have a reason for commiseration? Will we have a reason for compassion? And he says, yes, compassion is totally a thing to strive for. You need to be compassionate, but realize that it's designed to help someone who's suffering, not because of something that they want to do, in the example of a horror movie or watching a tragic play, but it's to help people who are in need right now, here, people in the church, people that you know who've maybe made a wreck of their lives. You can come alongside and you can have compassion on them, but realize that that compassion for those sorrows, all sorrows are going to cease in heaven. And so our compassion, our need for compassion is also going to pass away. And so the answer to his question, so do we love sorrows because commiserating cannot exist without misery, is accurate. We love sorrow in our sinful nature because misery loves company. But in heaven, there'll be no more misery. There'll be no more need for compassion or commiseration. And so Augustine rightly is able to observe that, and he says, beware of impurity. What he means by that is, when you are seeking to help people and you're seeking to exercise your compassion, make sure that you're not seeking to exercise that compassion by going to movies like horror movies or watching those kind of things, because that's a misplaced effort. And finishing in paragraph 2.4, but in those days, wretch that I was, I loved that grief and looking for occasions at which to grieve. In the actor's feigned and conjured sorrows, the spectacle pleased me all the more, and more ardently when it brought me to tears. Is it a wonder that a luckless sheep, impatient of your oversight, strays from your flock only to be beset by festering pustules? This was the source of my love for sorrow, not in the kind of sorrow that penetrated deep within me, for I did not long for the suffering I saw on the stage, but only the kind that would scratch me lightly. But just as with the scratches of fingernails, there are inflamed swellings, pus, and putrefaction. My life being such, was it a life, my God? This wraps up the opening paragraphs in Book 3. Augustine is examining his life and his desire to surround himself with miseries and to commiserate with others. That's where that saying, misery loves company, comes from. And we'll explore it more on Sunday, Lord willing. See you then.